It's another week of Comics Talk Comedy. I'm without Jesse, but I do have a podcasting professional, Jimmy Calloway, in the house. How's it going, man?
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
No problem. So it's Thursday night or Saturday. I don't know which day
sure.
of the week it is.
Yeah.
So did you do any shows this week?
I did. I got to do the Cameron Esposito show last night at the American Comedy Company.
Okay.
And that was a lot of fun. It was like a real small crowd, kind of a weird crowd, like, you know when they're small and they're kind of spaced out,
mm-hmm.
they don't really ever get.
Right.
But she handled them with great aplomb. So I was really excited to be on that show because I'm a big fan of hers.
Matt Burke was on the show, too.
Matt Burke was on the show. Matt hosted, and then I did the
opening.
He hosted.
He's a weird host.
It was, like, he did seem like he, and he said to me, he's like, I've only done this a couple times. That was my Matt Burke voice.
And, yeah. It's terrible.
Thank you. And I'm not a voice guy. And then I did the opening spot, and then she brought Matt Ingbritson, I think that's how you say his name, down from L.A., what I'd seen before, too, and he's really funny.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a really good show.
So how much time did you do?
I did 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
Matt did 10 as well? Or
I think he might have done closer to 8.
Okay.
Somewhere in there. But yeah.
Kind of a quick show, though. Was it an hour?
It was. It was an hour and a half, but it went by really quickly.
So it was just you two, and then the feature did what, like 30 or something?
No, he only did, I think he did, he might have done 30, maybe 20.
Okay, and then she did an hour?
She did an hour. Yeah.
Was she recording anything, or?
No, I think she just, she might have actually, now that I'm thinking about it, she might have done like 55, but
okay.
In the same neighborhood.
Yeah, and she did well?
Yeah, she did a lot of crowd work, and that like really, clearly got them over onto her side more.
Right.
Still kind of a weird crowd, but yeah, it was fun.
And you're like a staple of the American Comedy Company.
Well,
huh?
I don't know about that. I mean, they do seem to like me a lot down there.
Right.
Though, so I'm very.
Have you
very
hosted any
that.
Weekends yet?
I did. I hosted Ron Funches a few weeks ago.
Okay.
And that was really fun. I had hosted there once before for TJ Miller and Brent Weinbach, another Wednesday show.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was really nervous about that because I really like those guys too,
right.
as comedians. And I didn't want to look like a jerk in front of them. And then, but then the Funches weekend, that was like 6 shows. So any nerves or any like not able to do this sort of thing, that all went away because
right.
it was like, well, now I have to do it.
Right.
So yeah, it worked out really well.
And he's a nice guy, right?
He's super nice.
I've never met him, but I can tell by his smile. He's
yeah.
probably a nice guy.
It's and you're not wrong. He's exactly. Off stage as he is on stage, just like really super nice.
That's cool.
He eats a lot of candy. And
that's nice.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, I only did one weekend there, and I did it with Rob Delaney.
Ooh, I love Rob Delaney.
Yeah, but he didn't really talk to me at all.
No?
No,
oh,
he was on his phone. He's a little bit older, and he doesn't drink, and he's a dad.
That's true, yeah.
So it made sense, but for me, I would prefer to do a weekend where the guy actually talks to you and you get some info.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we hung out with Funches a few times, like, because Sam Wiles was also on the show, and Dallas McLaughlin was on there, too, but he would have to leave to go back, because he lives up in Vista, and he's got a little kid now and everything.
Right.
So Sam and Funches and I would hang out, and some of the other guys, and he wasn't, like, he was cool, but he was kind of quiet, but it was fun just hanging out with him.
Right.
Yeah, he was a fun guy to hang out with. I did an opening there for Greg Fitzsimmons a few months ago. And I didn't really talk to him either, but I was just super nervous.
Yeah, because you were still kind of new then.
Oh, I was, yeah. Well, I'm still kind of new.
Right.
Yeah, I was even newer. So, yeah, I didn't really talk to him. But it wasn't because he was, I was just scared.
Well, he's been a staple and, he's been around a while.
It was really weird. And then he was on an episode of Louie recently, and it was still weird for me. I'm like, oh, I was on a show with that guy.
Right.
It's all a world, Jeff.
That's
a crazy dream.
Yeah, it is a dream. Do you think people are upset that you're getting all these spots?
I hope not. I mean, I haven't had anybody say anything to my face, but I wouldn't imagine that's how things are done anyway.
No.
So, why, do you know something that I don't?
No, but I mean, comics talk.
That's true. I don't know. That thought has occurred to me, and I hope that's not the case. But
no one's treated you differently.
No, not that I can tell. I mean, I do go out of my way to be nice to people.
Mm-hmm. You're a big handshake guy.
I like to shake hands. Yeah. But I understand if because like Gordon Downs doesn't like to especially during cold and flu season. He's explained to me a couple times. That's perfectly fine.
Oh, can I say that I don't like shaking hands?
If you do not want to shake hands,
I avoid handshakes. But you just put it out there, and I feel like your handshake raping me every time you do.
Well, I feel
bad.
I had no idea. Well, I had no idea it was so traumatic for you.
I'm a germaphobe. I gotta touch doors.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Consider the handshake. You've been given a lifetime pass.
I'm out of the handshake.
You're out of the handshake.
And
program.
We're okay.
We are absolutely.
All right. Cool. That's the main reason I wanted to have you on. So that's our show.
I'm glad we got that cleared up. Yeah.
So
yeah.
You got your start like in bands, though, I think.
That was as far as performing and stuff goes. I was in a sketch troupe very briefly about 10 years ago, 11 years ago.
And you grew up in San Diego, or?
I did. I grew up in Alpine, California.
Okay.
So, yeah, very, very bored.
Right.
And and music and comedy and comic books, they were all kind of like staples.
Mm.
So those are all three things that I've, you know, continued my vested interest in. Yeah, definitely.
Were you like a touring rock guy?
I have toured with the bands I've been in, usually the West Coast, sometimes into the Southwest. And I spent a week in Mexico when I was in a band called Slab City, which was, that was a lot of fun.
Did you vocals or?
Yeah, I was mostly the vocalist in all the bands I've been in. The last band I was in, I was the keyboardist though.
Okay.
Which I don't really know how to play keyboards. But,
so why did they have you on that?
Well, it was a band called The Stallings of Sound, and they're still playing, and it was initially a one-man act. So he just had drum machines and his guitar, and he sang. My friend Hattie, who wrote the theme music for our If I'm Loud or I'm Right.
I've never listened to that show, so I'm not sure.
It's not. I don't recommend it. But if you ever get a chance to hear the theme music,
yeah,
that's okay.
Is that at the beginning?
That's at the beginning.
I could do that.
And you can just, yeah. So he started out as a one, just doing it by himself,
right.
And then he added Dave, the bass player, and then he added me. And basically, I mean, Dave can actually play bass, but he basically writes everything, Hattie. So then he just tells us what to do.
Okay.
So he would just show me what keys to press when, and I was able to, you know, it took a while. I played with him for, I want to say about 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the first year was pretty rocky.
Right.
But, yeah, eventually I got it. Because, I mean, if you're around, even if you're not a musician, if you're around punk bands enough, you pick up enough tricks to, you know,
skate. Is there a lot of keyboards in punk bands?
There's been definitely a resurgence over the last, like, 10 years or so. There's a lot more, like, the old garage stuff from the 60s, and then there was another kind of garage resurgence in the 90s. And a lot of that stuff is pretty keyboard-driven. So even if it's not, you know, in the forefront, it'll be around. But, I mean, as far as I'm, there's not a ton of bands in town that use keyboards.
You still in the music industry? Or are you
In a manner of speaking. I mean, I still, in fact, I you know, unofficially quit the band a few months ago, and then they went on tour this last, I think it was 2 weeks ago. I think they just came home last weekend. Apparently did not go that well with the new keyboardist.
Mm.
So they want me to fill in a couple shows until they can find another replacement.
Is that something you make money at?
Not at all.
No.
But apparently they did. They didn't lose any money on this tour, which is definitely a step in the right direction.
What was you guys? How was your approach? Would you email places and being like, "Hey, we want to put on a show. Can we do a door deal?" Or
Either that. Well, let me think. Yeah, it's kind of a mix of both. It's like you'll have friends in other towns whose bands have come to San Diego to play. You set them up, and then they kind of return the favor when you come to their town.
Okay.
So that's mostly what it goes through. And then so they're usually whoever's in town that you know is the one setting up that sort of a deal. But most punk clubs are, I mean, they're aware if you're a touring band, you're going to need gas money and stuff like that. So whatever money they take at the door, not all of it, but they'll give it over to you. And like when, you know, we'd play shows locally with touring bands, we'd get a few bucks. We usually just give it to the touring band.
Okay.
And then that sort of thing is usually reciprocated. I mean, if they're not assholes, which
doesn't
happen that often.
No. Hmm. Yeah, because we're doing our little tour here in a couple weeks here. And
that's right, yeah.
Kind of thinking about how we're going to promote it. You know, we're mostly going into spots in our hometowns.
Mm-hmm.
But like Like, I haven't lived in Maine for 8 years.
Right.
So it's like, you know, I have friends in San Diego that I see every week, and they don't even come to shows.
Right.
Now I'm hoping that people that haven't seen me in 8 years will come. Well, I did a show there probably like 4 years ago and had a good amount, you know, but I don't know if I'm going to get that many. Plus, we're doing two. We're doing a Friday and a Saturday.
Oh, okay.
I'm more pushing the Saturday, but still, like, hoping, you know, they're not duds, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely something that you can compare comedy to music, is when your local people don't really care. You know what I mean? Like, I have trouble getting my friends to show up. The first time that you had me feature at Winston's, a lot of my friends showed. That was the first time I'd done, like, a bigger show.
Okay.
And since then, it's been kind of not, you know, I don't mind. Like, I'll put it out there, hey, I'm on the show.
Right.
And my friends don't show. It's like, I get it. They have other stuff to do. But when you go out of town, or even if you just don't, I was in a band called the Dissimilars that played for about 4 years.
How many bands were you in total?
Oh, I don't know. Probably, like, actual bands that actually, you know, did some stuff, probably about three.
Okay.
But, I mean, there was a lot of, you know, misfires or bands that I was in for a couple months that fell apart. So I was in the Dissimilars from 04 to 08, and we did okay locally, but we would play, like, once a month. So people would just be like, eh, I'll see them next time they're in town.
Right.
And then we broke up, and then we played a reunion show last summer. And the place was packed. And I was like, why are there... We didn't have this many people.
Right.
And I was like, oh, because we haven't played in 5 years.
Yeah.
It becomes more of an event. So, I mean, if you haven't been back home in about 4 years, I would imagine people are like, oh, we got to go see Bilodeau.
I hope.
I certainly don't see why they wouldn't.
I don't know. We put on a show last time, but we were only like... I was only like... I wasn't even a year in yet. I was close to a year. I was 11 months in, but now I'm... No, I'd hope to be a little bit stronger. And,
sure,
you know,
I
plan to do a different 30 on both shows.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
So we'll see what happens.
Yeah,
you know?
No, I think it'll be fun.
I hope.
Blast.
We're going to lose money for sure.
Well, yeah, that's part of the...
So,
we used to think of it as like a vacation, like a kind of a working vacation, where like you're going to throw some money around, but you're going to have a good time.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I'm hoping that there's no drama that happens.
That would be nice.
Did you have any incidents like that?
Nothing... like, super out of hand. You hear horror stories, but, I mean, there would be bickering and fight. I mean, you get three or four guys, five guys into a van for, you know, days at a time.
Mm-hmm. What was the longest you were ever on the road?
When I went to Mexico with Slab City, we were on the road because we went up the West Coast as well. I think we were out on the road for about a month total.
Oh, wow.
We came home for a little bit in that month, but there was, like, a month where I was touring with a band.
That's pretty cool.
It was a lot of fun. And
there was no incidents with that one?
There was nothing really. I mean, I did notice that we all kind of had a buddy system going. There was like six of us, I think.
So were you all like good friends?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I had known those. I was actually, that tour, I was only filling in for their vocalist because he couldn't make it. Like last minute, something came up. But the band, the Dissimilars, we used to play with Slab City all the time. So we were already kind of like sister bands.
Yeah. I think that the best thing is, you know, we're all like kind of friends, but not like best friends.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you're best friends, you're more likely to be honest with people.
Oh, sure.
But when you're like, you know, on the verge of good friends, you're
polite.
Yeah, you'll keep your mouth shut more.
Yeah, definitely.
But
I mean, even if I hadn't known those guys as well as I did, that, I mean, after the first couple of days, in fact, because I think on that tour, I didn't know the guitarist that well. He had been in the band before I knew them, and then he rejoined them up just to fill in for this show, for this tour. So I didn't know Larry at all.
Right.
But by the second day, we were like, oh, it's like being in combat, you know,
except
that you probably aren't going to die.
Yeah, hopefully not. Well, Mexico, anything can happen.
That's true.
Did you guys do any promotions, like the day of the show, pass out flyers or anything like that?
No, not really. I mean, a lot of these shows, you whoever's setting up the show, and like I say, the other bands that we're playing with, and you know, they want to push it.
Okay.
And it definitely, down there, Slab City had toured down there once before, so they'd already had somewhat established themselves amongst like the punk scene.
Mm-hmm.
And Mexico has had a pretty thriving punk scene for quite a while.
You speak English when you sing?
Yeah, but they don't really notice. I mean, you can't really tell what I'm saying, even if you do speak English.
Right, okay.
So, and there was some, I think there was some Spanish words, because those guys were all from El Centro, so.
They spoke it.
They all, I was the only one, I think, in the band who did not speak Spanish.
Okay.
You
sell any merch?
What were
you guys selling?
Like t-shirts and records and stuff.
Did you sell a good amount?
Yeah, I think we did okay. I think, I ended up coming home from that tour with $200.
Okay.
Which at the time was a lot of money for me too, because I just graduated college and I was working at a 7-Eleven.
You go here, around here?
Yeah, I went to San Diego State. Yeah.
Okay.
And so it was all in pesos, but it was still.
Hey, money's money.
Yeah. And it was, they were very happy that I filled in because it was kind of a last minute thing, but I was happy to quit the 7-Eleven I was working at.
You worked at a 7-Eleven?
Oh, I worked at a 7-Eleven for many years.
Really?
This one, I'd worked at one in El Cajon for about 7 years.
That's scary?
No, it's just really boring. It's scary in the long-term existential, what am I doing with myself?
Yeah.
But
is that what you studied in school?
I was a double major in English and philosophy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you have any goals to use that?
None.
No.
I was really bored, so I went back to school. That was like my main thing. I mean, I would tell people, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get a real job and get out of here. But as soon as I graduated, I went back to 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
Because I just wanted something else to do.
Did you guys have a merch pitch? Because I think that was the biggest thing. We didn't sell much when me and Jesse did the weekend at the Palace. We're doing another one for July 4th and 5th, and we just didn't sell much. We sold like 3 CDs and like 8 shirts.
Really?
Yeah, which that's I thought it would sell. I mean, the second show on Friday, that's when we really did well, and that's when we sold like 7 shirts.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it was pretty, nobody really paid, which I understand, because it's kind of expensive. They drop a lot of money.
That's, yeah.
You know, and then we're asking you to buy more. You know, what they used to do at the Palace is have like a tip bucket, which is the worst thing ever.
Really?
Like you have to stand outside and like.
Oh, yeah. I went to a couple shows where they did that, and I was as an audience member. Yeah. I felt really awkward.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I want. Because, yeah, you are going to drop at least like $40 if you go to a comedy club.
And if you buy tickets, it's $20 each.
So, you know? I mean, yeah, it's going to be. So it's a little easier for punk bands to sell merch because
there's no drink minimum.
There's no minimum.
And they probably drink it anyways. But, yeah.
And there's little cover. And there is like a still real sense of like, oh, we got to buy stuff from these guys so they can drive home. I mean, you're not going to make money, but it does. You're less likely to lose money because people tend to be pretty supportive.
Yeah, the biggest thing for us, the biggest expenditure, if that's a word, is the flight.
Yeah.
Because it costs about $500.
Right. That was always our biggest, because we didn't own a van of any kind, so we would have to rent one every time we went out.
All right.
So that was always the most, was the rental and the gas money.
Yeah, because we have the flight plus the rental.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to cost us at least $1,000 a person.
Yeah.
You know, so to think that we'll make $4,000, I don't think so.
Yeah, that might be sitting a little bit.
Yeah. Luckily, almost every show, we didn't have a down payment.
Oh, that's good.
You know, to rent the room or whatever, except for in Baltimore, and it was like $450.
Wow.
So we're hoping to not lose our ass on that show.
Yeah, I know. No, I don't think you will. I think, I mean, it's fun to do, though, right? I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I'm hoping. It's just going to be hot as shit. Like, we planned it terribly. Like, you know, it was just a thing that we were talking on the podcast and being like, maybe we should. And then we, like, called Lauren and called Dewey and, like, all right, we have a tour.
Yeah.
You know, but if we would have planned it, it would have been much better to do, like, in the spring or the fall because, A, it wouldn't be as hot, and, B, the flights are cheaper, and, C, we could have done colleges. We could have tried to move to colleges, but during the summer, that's not really an option.
Right.
So luckily we've booked every day except for Sunday. So we have, you know, Friday, Saturday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Man, that sounds great, man. I would love to do something like that.
Yeah, we're hoping.
Yeah. No, I think you're going to
I think we'll have a good story for some people. I know some people have gone on mini tours.
Sure, yeah.
But not kind of the way we're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I know Lockwood and those guys did one, but it was mostly just in their town.
Right.
It was different venues in that town, and then like Jesse and Zoltan and Brandon and Bijan and Josh Lawson did it a couple of years ago, but it was kind of the same thing, mostly just the same area, but we're doing like 6 different states.
Right.
So we'll see.
I think it'll be good. I think it's going to be
good. We just got one random date where we don't know anyone in like Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Uh-huh.
So we're hoping that we'll get like 20 people.
Yeah.
$5 a person.
Yeah.
So. We'll see.
Yeah, I think it's going to be great, man.
So growing up, you were a big fan of comedy?
Mm-hmm.
Who are some of the people that you like?
Very much so. From a very early age, Steve Martin
was a
very big deal. My parents had his records. And
Parents seen your show yet? You do your little skits?
My mom has seen me a few times. She's a big fan. My dad is not. I don't speak much to my dad.
Oh, okay.
So there's that.
Yeah.
But my aunt and my grandmother even came to see me.
No, it wasn't you. I thought it was... Brian Powis is grandmother flipped me off for some reason. I thought it was you for a second, but I was like, no, it wasn't your grandmother. It was Brian Powis' grandmother.
No, that was a different... My grandmother... It was at the subterranean show that Dewey runs.
That's where you had to go see you?
That's where I... Because they were in town. It was my niece's birthday that weekend, so they were in town for that. And so they wanted to come see me, and I was like, yeah, you know, I don't generally do any, like, blue stuff.
Yeah.
So I wasn't worried for me. And they're... You know, they know what it is.
Yeah.
So, like, the other guys were doing, and Aaron Freskas came up to me before, and he's like, oh, I want to do dick jokes, but there's these three old ladies over here. And I was like, go ahead.
Did you tell him that was your grandmother?
I did, yeah. And just because I thought it was, I didn't want to at first because I thought it would be funnier if I didn't.
Yeah.
But then it was funnier if I did.
Yeah.
Just to see the look on his face.
Oh, he gets nervous anyways.
So. Right. So, yeah, that was fun. And then, and they didn't, like, I was watching them watch the other guys.
Yeah.
And they weren't, like, or heckling or anything. But the next day, they were like, you were the only one with any class.
They used that term, class.
I was like,
who else is on the show?
It was Dewey, Aaron. Oh, you know what? Now I can't remember.
How long ago was this?
Like 2 months ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's tough to keep track of all your shows. I get it.
Yeah, you know. And then I think I had something else that night, so I had to leave like right after. Anyway, Brandon Young was on the show. I do remember that. They liked him.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's his audience, though.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was like, oh, he's going to do well with them.
Yeah.
But then I had to leave after that, so I don't remember who else. I remember there was a couple guys. I think there was at least one guy from like Murrieta or Temecula that I recognized that I had met at Shamrocks up there.
He has a lot of random people on the shows.
Yeah.
How was Shamrocks? I see
it's
it.
Not, it's a lot, you know, it's a lot better now. They were doing that kind of a gong show thing for a while, and that was death.
You did that?
I did that a couple times. The guy,
you go by yourself when you drive up there?
I have gone by myself, but Berno will go with me too, because he can't get into ACC.
That's a Tuesday?
Yeah, that's a Tuesday show.
He must turn 21 this year or next?
Yeah, he turns 21 at the end of August,
okay.
I believe.
Yeah. He's almost there.
He's almost there.
But ACC will be closed by then.
There's the rub. Is that, yeah, he's, unfortunately. I mean, I think, yeah, the ACC mic is closing down, but I think something will be there that's almost the same thing. I have no way to back that up. It's just a feeling that I have.
And the reason they're closing it, they're closing ACC because of the AC.
Is that what it is?
That's what I heard. The rumor was that it costs too much to run the AC.
Yeah,
the ACC.
I hadn't heard that specific detail.
What did you hear?
I heard it was just not making money, so
yeah,
they had to close it down.
But which is crazy because that's by far the most successful open mic.
Yeah, that is weird to me.
And
I guess it would be more that it's not making enough money, whichever. Well, but I'm not sure what determines what is enough money in that case.
I haven't been in a while, but. Yeah, but I know a lot of those Wednesday shows aren't. There's more people at the open mic than there is the Wednesday shows.
Yeah.
And they're not paying anybody. So.
Right.
But who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. And, you know, I'm a little hesitant to speculate. Just because, like, as soon as, it was two Tuesdays ago that Mike said on stage, like, oh, there's only going to be 7 more or 8 more of these. And you just felt everybody in the room, all the comics in the room just clench up. And I was like, okay, to myself, just like, okay, relax. We don't know anything yet.
Right.
So I don't want to, I just don't want to get caught up in the freaking out.
Yeah, you're paid regular. What do you need this open mic bullshit?
That's not at all true.
You got it crushed in the weekend.
Even though I got to go up last night, I was down there on Tuesday for the open mic and I didn't get to go up. And it wasn't like a big deal. But
oh, you're not even family yet there?
Apparently not. But that's, I don't, it's fine. I don't need
any. You just like being there.
I do. I do like going. I do like watching my friends go up.
Yeah.
It was kind of a weird.
Who do you like watching? Who's on the Callaway's friends list?
You're gonna make me make. Don't make me name names.
No, nobody.
Then I'm gonna. But then if I leave somebody out, I'm gonna have to answer to them.
Nobody
later.
Listens.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
Well, Brian Faust is a dear friend of mine. He was like the first guy I made friends with in the scene.
Okay.
And so In fact, we were both we made friends, and then we were both in our heads like, oh, I hope this guy's funny because I don't want to be friends with this guy if he sucks.
You both said that.
But fortunately, it panned out okay. Yeah, right. He was there the first night I ever went up, was at ACC.
Okay.
And he held my phone for me while it was recording. And
pretty gay.
So it is pretty gay. But we don't care. We
was
love
that your
each
first
other.
Show?
That was one of the first time I ever went up was at ACC.
Had you had been to a show before?
At ACC or
yeah.
In general?
ACC?
Yeah, oh yeah. I had been going there to see, like, I think the first time I went there was to see Dave Foley, like
all
in
right.
2011.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, they would get names like that, so I would go. Like, I saw Doug Benson there. And,
right.
Yeah. So I'd already liked the club, yeah.
So how long before you got on stage that you say, hey, I'm going to do this?
Well, I've been wanting to do it since I was a little kid, but then sort of the catalyst was I got laid off last year.
From 7-Eleven?
If only. No, I was working this social media marketing job in Irvine.
All right.
And I was commuting up there.
Wow. You still live in Alpine or you live in...
No, I live in Spring Valley now.
All right.
Just like
stepping
slowly.
Up.
Yeah, very slowly. I like to pace myself. So I was working up there, and it was good money. It was the first time I'd had a real, like, desk job, because before that I was working in a warehouse.
How far is that commute?
It was like an hour and a half, but in the morning I could make it in, like, an hour.
You would go early?
Yeah, I would just drive really fast, yeah, way before the traffic got there. So the money was good, and the job wasn't that bad, but it was that real office, you know, horrible, you know, corporate type thing.
Yeah.
So I was listening to a lot of podcasts and stuff, which I had not really done. And I'd always liked comedy and everything. Every time the band would go out, I'd always bring a bunch of comedy CDs with me, and so we, you know, to play for us in the car.
To sell.
And to sell, yeah, bootlegs.
Yeah.
You know? And so I said to myself, I'm like, all right, seriously, once this job is over with, because I knew I wasn't going to work there forever, I'm going to do stand-up. But I thought it would be like another year or so, and then they were like, oh, good news, you can start on that now.
So did you get like a severance or whatever?
I did. I got like 2 weeks severance, and then I was on unemployment for about 6 months, and then I got that renewed in December, and then in January the government was like, nope, anybody who is on a, you know, extension is getting cut off.
Oh, wow.
So I've been cut off since January.
All right.
Just kind of on my savings and like nickel and dime and stuff.
You're not working at all? Just working. A professional comedian?
Well, professional. I work a few days a week in a comic book store.
All right.
San Diego Comics, 6937 El Cajon Boulevard.
We'll have to edit that part.
Sure. And do you need me to stop if you have another point?
Okay.
But that's just for free comics, basically. Mm-hmm. So other than that, like today, I spent the day today putting a bunch of stuff up on Amazon to sell. You know, I got more stuff than I know what to do with.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm just kind of, you know.
You get bored during the day not working?
Not really. I got a lot of, I write and I read a lot. And I'm trying to catch up on Fargo.
Okay.
So yeah, I guess there are times where I am a little bored. But
yeah.
But if that's the thing is like when I have a day job, that's when I'm really efficient with my spare time because I only have so much of it. But I hate it. So you know, not really working, I'm trying to utilize it as much as I can and not just watch TV all day. So, like, I was being productive today, you know, shilling stuff on the internet.
Shilling?
Yeah.
It's a good word.
Yeah, thanks.
Never heard that before.
And I'm also, like, I'm a story editor for Crime Factory magazine, which doesn't pay, but it's, like, my friends and I run this crime fiction magazine. They do much more work than what I do, but I'm in charge of like accepting and rejecting stories that have been submitted to us.
Okay.
So I've been doing that because submissions are currently open. And
what is that like? Like a forensic file story?
Yeah, it can be. I mean, yeah, you know, cops and robbers type crime fiction stuff, noir and stuff like that. It's a good magazine, and it's mostly online now. It was a print magazine, but now it's just online. I think you can do print on demand with it.
All right.
But that's not my department.
Okay.
So I don't know how that works. But that was my main thing for a long time was crime fiction writing. And so I still keep my hand in that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, let's wind it back to this first time at ACC.
Had you
gone to a few of the open mics before that?
I had. I was actually, so it was in July that I finally, I got laid off in June, and it took me a few weeks.
Had you been writing before that?
I had been writing. I decided, like, not connected to this, but in January of last year, I was at this corporate summit for my job where all the branches got together in Huntington Beach, and we had to sit through a lot of presentations, and I didn't have a smartphone like everybody else, so I was sitting there writing, and I was writing a lot of jokes, and I'd been on Twitter for a while, so I was like, I'm going to use my Twitter just for jokes. I'm not going to tweet other stuff, because like if I get a story published or something like that, I use it for self-promotion, but I didn't use it much other than that, and all my favorite comedians were on Twitter. So like, I'm just going to do what they do. So I started writing like one-liners and stuff for that. And then so when I, like in July, last July, I was going to start doing stand-up, that was where a lot of my material came from, was what I had been writing on Twitter for the 6 months previous.
All right. So you just did a bunch of one-liners?
Yeah. And then, it took me a couple weeks to get some stuff, to get like, I knew it was 3 minutes, but I wrote out like five or what I thought would be five. I didn't want to be, you know, short.
Right.
And then I started going down there, but it was like the first 3 weeks I went down, I didn't get called. And it was kind of discouraging, and I wasn't yet going to any other open mics. I was like, I'm going to crack this one, and then I'll start, you know.
Was that when Bo was hosting?
Bo was hosting a couple of those nights, but the night I finally did get up, Mike was hosting.
Mike
Ula.
Mike, okay, yeah, I know him.
And, you know, larger fellow?
Yeah.
You've seen pictures.
I heard he had to throw someone out yesterday.
Oh, man. I was sitting right behind that guy. And I got to tell you, P.S., I've had my eye on that guy for weeks. Like, that guy's trouble.
Yeah.
I know something.
Is he a comic?
No, he's a friend of a comic, like a newer guy whose name I don't recall.
Yeah.
And yeah, he just blurted out in the middle of Venti's set, "Shut the fuck up, fat boy."
Which is, I'm sorry, that's fucking funny.
It was, I guess.
I heard it just sucked the energy out of the room.
It completely killed the room. And Dan, bless his heart, he kind of frowned and then he went, "Dad?" And that was hilarious. But the guy was sitting right there. And then, yeah, so then Mike lumbers over. And I just see him lean over and say, so I couldn't hear what he said. Yeah. The guy got up and left immediately.
Yeah.
He did not. So I don't know. Whatever Mike said to him,
Mike's getting
effective.
Some shit over there. I heard he got into a fight a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I heard that too. I apparently that rumble happened right after I walked back inside. So I missed it by a mere seconds.
And
who doesn't love a good street brawl?
Yeah.
I was very upset that I missed that. But I don't know. Some of these guys, man. Some of these newer guys. I hate to say like newer guys.
Yeah.
Who the hell am I? But they're just so, they're eager, bless them, for their enthusiasm.
Right.
But it's like, relax, you guys. It's.
Yeah, but I think everyone's like that when they first start. You expect to be given more.
I guess.
You know, you just, I don't know. When I, going back into my brain, I thought, you know, I'll be funny. I'm going to get on shows. You know, and no, you know, that's not how it works at all.
I mean, like, it was very disheartening. The first couple of weeks I was at ACC, it didn't take me long to figure out, like, oh, this isn't all just strictly a lottery.
Right.
So there's, like, pop-ins and stuff like that. And I was like, man, that's a bummer because I was confident in my stuff. I'm like, if I can't tell these jokes,
they're not going to know how great
I
am.
But I was helped out by my friend Russell Hicks.
Okay, perfect.
He and I were actually roommates before he started doing comedy.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Right after he moved out, yeah, he started doing stand-up. And because he was in a band called the Rich White Males.
Didn't know that either.
And and the Dissimilars used to play with him all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so he moved in, and that was for like a couple years. And then he started doing stand-up. And so he would let me know when he was doing a show. Not always, because by now he's in L.A.
Yeah.
This was last year. So I was down I went down to the open mic, and then Russ comes up. He's like, oh, hey, like, he just thought I was there for the show. And I was like, no, I'm actually trying to get up. I'm going to start doing this. And he was like, oh, well, that's even better. So he said something to Mike, which I didn't know he was going to do, but he asked Mike to put me up. So, and it went really well.
Yeah.
So I was like, I was a little like, I kind of wanted to do it myself,
mm-hmm.
but I was also grateful you know, just to finally get it out of the way.
And you just crushed?
No.
No.
But I didn't eat shit either.
Yeah.
So that was my main relief.
So how quickly did you continue after that?
Oh, immediately.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that might have been the first week of the Kumite.
Mm-hmm.
So I went down there and did that. And then I just started making the rounds.
Did you do Kumite tonight?
No, I didn't.
Oh.
It's been a Thursday. For whatever reason, I've had things on Thursdays, so I haven't been able to make it to either the Kumite or Shooters.
Yeah, and you live in Spring Valley.
I know. It's right down the street from my house. You can see my old job from the parking lot of Shooters.
Okay.
And so
the 7-Eleven?
It's really... No, it's this awful warehouse job I used to have.
Yeah.
There is a 7-Eleven nearby, though, which I hope they're hiring. So, yeah, I just haven't had a chance to get out there.
I went there once. It was mm-hmm. okay when I did it.
Yeah, I mean, it always, even though I've done it more than a few times, there's always part of me when I'm on my way there, like, oh, boy. But then you get there, and it's like, oh, this is fine. This is, yeah. That was the first place I ever got heckled, oddly enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something else I had been dreading. Like, I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can handle that. And then I did. And then I felt great. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Then I can handle this.
You're not really a crowd worky guy.
Not really. I'm trying to become more so, though. Mm. I mean, at the very least, like, if an opportunity for something comes up, I want to use it
mm-hmm.
and not just stick to the material.
Right.
But that had been, like, my initial strategy going in was to just do material. And I had a lot of it, you know, of varying quality, but it was like, I wasn't just going to get up. I didn't trust myself to just get up there and improvise.
Right.
So.
But you said you've done improv, right?
No, it was sketch. Yeah, that was all written out. And that was even like, that might have been part of why it didn't last very long, because I wanted everything written out. And my friend who was in it with me wanted to improvise more. And so we would fight a lot over that.
Okay.
So that was one of the reasons we didn't really continue with it.
Do you still write sketch now?
Not so much. Berner and I have written a few things. And we shot like a short film. This is Jeffrey Berner.
Okay,
yes.
Cool. Just name dropping left and right.
You know, my dear friend, my close personal friend, Jeffrey Berner, who's now sleeping on my mom's couch
as well.
I don't know if you want that broadcast, but there it is.
So you live at your house?
Oh, I live in my mom's house. Had I not made that clear?
No.
Yeah,
in Spring Valley?
In Spring Valley, yeah. That's where Russell lives.
Russell used to live there, too?
And now Jeffrey Berner and April Ventura live there. It's becoming quite the comedy household.
Oh, you got a spare couch?
Yeah, you want to crash? We can fold the couch out, and you and Berner can sleep.
How does your mom feel about taking in these?
My mom's fine with it. Well, that was the thing. When I moved in there, my sister had been living there for a while, and then I moved in because I was living in a really, really cheap place in El Cajon while I was going to school.
Okay.
But then they needed me out of there, and I still had a year or a semester left. So I couldn't go back to work full time, so my mom let me move in there, and then I just haven't moved back out.
Right.
But we had a spare room, and my mom was looking to, because she actually owns a couple other condos that she rents out. Like, since her and my dad split up, she's kind of sidelining into real estate a little bit.
Okay.
So she was like, hey, we can rent this room out. And I just didn't want to rent it out to some stranger. So I knew I would have friends that would need a place. So Russell was the first. And then eventually his younger brother moved in there. Another guy I know, another guy I used to work with, lived there for a little while.
Right.
And then April needed a place, so she moved in. She's been there like a year and a half.
Oh, so she pays rent at least.
She does, yeah. Berner's kind of couch surfing right now, but he's looking actively. In fact,
he doesn't work either, right?
No, he just got a job at Ciro's Pizzeria there with Matt Lockwood, another personal friend of mine. Maybe
okay. Name dropping.
And so, yeah, and we're actually all, a bunch of us are planning on moving into a place this summer, but that's only if I can't do it if I can't get a job.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a line on a job at this comic book publisher doing marketing for them, but I haven't heard anything from them recently. But that would be,
because you're what? You're a little older? You're what, 36?
I'll be 37 in August there, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So how does that mentally, are you okay living with your mom?
You know, it's not actually, there's definitely times where I'm like, oh, I better get out of here.
Right.
But not that much.
Yeah. I think the way I look at it kind of with doing comedy, it's like we're all the same age. It's kind of.
That's a great way to, let's all start doing that.
Yeah.
Because I take enough shit for being in my mid-30s as it is.
Yeah, but I just think it's weird because sometimes I forget that Jesse's like 38 or something like mm-hmm. that. He's going to hate that I said his age. But, you know, I just don't even look at it that way.
Yeah,
you
no,
know?
I feel the same way.
It's kind of like, it's just like having Burner on. I mean, you could say that Burner is...
Well,
like,
he's kind of the exception.
Yeah, he's weird.
Even at, yeah,
yeah.
You could put it that way. Yeah, because even at 20, he's
but
my
even,
age.
Even, yeah, but even the younger comics, other than Tyler Reese is kind of a goofball, but mm-hmm. the other ones are kind of like... Like Matt Blagg, he looks like he's fucking 50, you know?
Right.
So I kind of...
Wait, he's not 50.
No, he's not.
Is he 49?
He's pretty close. But yeah, I mean, you just like we're all kind of the same age because we're kind of all doing the same thing. I
sure.
mean, do you have sometimes regrets that you didn't start comedy earlier?
Oh, absolutely. That's probably the only thing that I really do regret. But at the same time, I whenever I think that, I try to temper it by realizing that if I had started earlier, I think I would have been... First of all, I would have been shittier at it.
Mm.
I think I like
shittier than you are now.
I think so. Like I think it's because I've gotten a lot more writing experience under my belt. Like
right.
I focused on that a lot, so it wasn't that much of a transition. And then also, I don't think I would have been able to handle it, like mentally.
Mm.
Like I feel much more mentally stable over the last couple of years than I did when I was in my 20s.
Right.
And so now. Like, you know, rejection or a shit show or, you know, getting heckled or something like that, I can handle that much better.
Has the music background helped you with that at all?
Yeah, I think so. It definitely, yeah, like we were saying, as far as trying to get your friends to come out, like I'm already used to my friends not coming out. It sounds more like, oh, poor me than I mean it to. But it's just you realize that you're doing like an artistic creative thing and not everybody's going to be able to join you on this, you know, magic carpet ride.
Yeah.
So...
You think there's a sense of jealousy to that?
What do you mean?
Because I remember when I worked at Home Depot, like, there was one of the guys that told me that I think I'm better than people for doing comedy.
Oh, yeah. That's.
Do you think people sometimes are like, no, I'm not, he's doing something that he thinks he's better than us. Do you think that has anything to do with it?
I can think of maybe, like, one of my friends that's a distinct possibility. But I think most of my friends are more like, oh, I just got stuff, dude. Like, I can't, you know what I mean? And so even if it's just sitting around jerking off, they're just not that into it. But right. I don't think anybody I know, I hope not anyway, I don't think anybody I know is, like, actively like, yeah, fuck that guy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's entirely possible. But I don't think it's the main thing.
Yeah.
I think it's mostly just that other people have other stuff going on. Yeah.
I think that was the toughest thing for me, you know, because I remember I had a show on my birthday a few years back and nobody came and I was like,
oh man,
I am never promoting a show ever again.
See, but that's just shitty regardless of what, if you threw yourself a birthday party and nobody came.
Yeah, I guess
that would be a bummer.
Thanks for making it feel even worse. Jesus. God.
I'm happy to help. But yeah, that, being actively creative, if that doesn't sound too pretentious, that's definitely helped.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like that's the trade-off for not having started comedy earlier. The trade-off is I'm more well-adjusted for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy with that.
Yeah. But on the same time, like I started writing when I was 14, you know, and I think back then you kind of figure out what's funny with comedy too.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like there's very few people that I see for the first time that are just awful that get good.
Yeah.
You know, it can happen, but for the most part, like when you see someone for the first time, you see something in them that they're going to be good at this.
Yeah.
You
definitely.
Know, but like at 14, I think you would figure it out like, oh, this isn't funny. You know, and then you start changing your writing. And I think even back then, so I think I was more mature when I was 14 than I am now, which is a weird thing to think about.
Yeah.
But, you know, I had more drive and I think, you know, but, you know, I did it once when I was 22 in a contest and didn't advance and then didn't do it again for 3 years.
Yeah.
You know,
see,
so.
Yeah, I think that because when I was 11, they brought back the Gong Show. And I gave serious thought to, like, I could go on the Gong Show. And that would be my shtick, was that I was 11.
Right.
And all I did was make mention of that idea to a couple people, and they laughed it down so hard that I didn't even mention stand-up.
At 11.
Comedy. Yeah. I mean, I was so into it even then. But, I mean, just the thought, I think that's probably a lot of what kept me from it, was just every time, because then when I was when I was about 23 or 24, I actually wrote out, like, and I'm like, I'm going to do this for reals. And I showed it to my girlfriend at the time, and she couldn't have been less supportive.
Mm.
And she was already like that. I don't know why I thought showing it to her would be a good idea.
She wasn't very supportive.
She was not. She was just like, no, we went and saw Comedian, the documentary with Seinfeld and what's his name?
Orny Adams.
And after the movie, I was so into it. And as we came out of the theater, I was like, I'm going to do it. And she says, no, you're going to turn out like that Orny Adams guy. And I couldn't think of a bigger insult.
Right. But you couldn't be more right.
That doesn't make it a nice thing to say.
What a dick move for her to say that, though.
It didn't even occur to me
at
the time.
Why was she even with you?
I don't know.
Yeah.
That was what I kept asking her. That's a whole other kettle of fish. But almost married that young lady.
Really?
Believe it or don't.
That's funny.
That's like when I did
a podcast with my ex about relationships, and we did an hour and a half, and dating a comedian, and an hour and a half podcast, she didn't say one nice thing about me. She just ripped on me the entire time. But that's whatever.
Yeah.
But fish in the basket, or whatever you said? Fish in the
kettle
bucket?
Kettle of fish?
Kettle of fish. All right. I don't know. Trying to get
fish in a basket better, though, I think. Let's make that a thing.
It's a sad fish. I don't know. But, yeah, so you got to have somebody that's supportive, I guess.
Yes, absolutely.
You have a girlfriend now?
I do, in fact, yeah.
She's supportive of the...
She's very... I'm almost surprised.
Right.
And I think it goes back to the same thing I was saying about being older, because she just turned 30, and like, so we've both been through enough kind of shit in our relationship life that now we're just like...
Relationship.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. Well done. now it's like, we're like, oh, you're not an asshole, so let's hang out. Like,
right.
It's much more laid back, and I'm very happy to have met her. And she's extremely supportive.
She's a big comedy fan, though.
She is. She's already... That was how I met
And she
her.
Doesn't do comedy, though, huh?
No. Although she has mentioned, like, giving it a shot, of which I'm like, yeah, absolutely.
No, just... let some people be fans. Does everyone have to do it?
No, I suppose you're right. I should discourage her.
Yeah.
That would be the right thing to do.
Have you dated a comedian?
I have, yeah.
And how was that?
It wasn't... Well, I've dated a couple. And,
whoa.
And,
Calloway gets it on with the ladies.
Let's
dish.
Gentleman never doesn't dish.
No names.
No names. One was fine. One was fine, and I'm still friends with her, and one I'm not.
Okay.
That way. But honestly, I don't think the comedian element really had much to do with it one way or the other.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't... I mean, I've dated women who were funny, who weren't comedians.
Could you date someone that's funnier than you?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
I would almost insist on it in some cases.
Well, for you, it's a little bit easier.
Yeah, I mean, who am I going to price myself out of the market? But, like, yeah, I've always liked better women who were smarter and funnier than me.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't happen that often.
Yeah.
But, you know... I've grown a lot as far as that sort of thing goes. When I was younger, in my 20s, I would date pretty much anybody who would, you know,
date you.
Yeah,
yeah.
Whatever you could get. Whatever low hanging fruit.
Yeah.
And that's a mean thing to say, but in some cases it's true. And so I've become a little more selective.
Mm-hmm.
And when I met Katie, I was definitely like, all right, I'm not gonna just jump.
She uses some elaborate last name, isn't it? Insert your name here.
That's her Facebook name.
Oh, that's not her real name.
No, believe it or don't.
Oh,
it's not.
I didn't know that.
I think that's because she just didn't want to put her last name on there. She just wanted to.
Do you know her last name?
I do.
Okay.
And I'll take it to my grave.
Okay. I don't care to know it.
Okay. Good.
But
I was just talking about the grave I own down the street.
Okay.
I'm just gonna take it there after the show.
I think it'd be interesting if you guys do get married to use that last name as your last.
I'll take
name.
Hers.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be very modern. My cousin did that with his wife.
Really?
But it's not nearly as you know, much of a sentence.
No.
As Katie's is.
Yeah. What is it again?
Has to put a name here. Yeah, I think it's Brazilian.
Is it?
I think so.
I think it's Swedish, but I'm not.
You could. I think it's Swedish Brazilian.
Swedish Brazilian.
Yeah, I think
it's perfect.
Yeah.
Works out great.
Yeah. It's a nice combo.
So she goes to shows with you?
She does.
Is that an added pressure?
No, not at all.
Okay.
It's actually nice to have her out there. You know, if I can hear her laughing, it makes me feel better about how things are going.
But do you try to seek her laughter?
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
Like, it's weird that when I'm up there, I don't hear it, because I'll record my sets and then listen to it, and it always sounds a little bit different. So it's just, like, I'm just up there trying to make people laugh. And yeah. if I hear, like, my friend Lauren came to a show a few weeks ago, and she has a pretty distinctive laugh, too. But I didn't hear it that much when I was on stage. When I listened to the recording, I was like, oh, she's all over this.
Right. Oh, so, who wouldn't be, you know?
So, no, it's not an added, there's no real added pressure if people I know are in the crowd. I do try, if my mom will go to a show, I try not to look right at her.
Right.
Because she'll laugh during the setup, and that'll throw me off. Like, she just knows where it's going, or she just finds the setup funny for some reason.
Yeah.
So I try not to look at her for that reason, but no, it's not any additional pressure.
Yeah. No, because I did a show for the first time for a girl that I don't know if I'm dating her, but things.
Oh, congrats.
And shut up. I get them hoes, you know what I'm saying?
Of course I know what you're saying.
But no, it was at fucking Second Wind,
mm-hmm.
and it was her and her friend were the only crowd members.
Mm-hmm.
I would say I was somewhat nervous.
Sure.
Because I was just hosting,
mm-hmm.
so I kind of just did a couple of one-liners and then just like, that's my time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, just because they were the only two crowd members,
mm-hmm.
so that was just a little weird. But yeah, for the most part, I don't really want them to go, even most shows.
Yeah.
Just because, I don't know, it could go bad.
Well, I mean, I feel that way about, there have been shows that I've done where I anticipate it's not going to be good, so I'll either not really promote it too hard, which just seems counter-logical, mm-hmm. if that's a word. Like, if it's going to not be that many people there, I should probably be encouraging
right.
people to
but
go.
But I get that.
Yeah. So, or, you know, I'll tell people about it, but I'll go, if you can't, you know, don't worry about it.
Right.
But if it's a bigger show, I tend to want, you know, more people to go. I guess it just depends. But I try not to think too much about that sort of stuff.
Right.
Because then you just start second guessing things, and then it gets in your head, and then
yeah. What's the most shows you've done in one night?
I think I went up four times in one night once.
Where was it?
And if Fun Mug counts as one of those times,
yeah, I would think so.
So yeah,
what was this? What was the four?
It was Winston's, and then Habano's.
Okay.
And then when I got to Fun Mug, they were doing just stand up sets, so I did another set there, and then I did Fun Mug itself.
Well, it doesn't
so mean, if you don't want to count that, that's fine. I
would say three.
Okay, three.
Three
that's,
places.
I can live with that. And then I think I've done like the triple dip on Sundays a couple times.
What is that? Store, Madhouse, and then Till 2?
Till 2. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's a good start to the week. If I can
Because
I usually can't get out on Monday, and Wednesday is usually not much going on. So those are like 2 days out. Right away. And
that's funny about Wednesdays.
Harder.
Is like 4 months ago, there was like 19 shows on Wednesdays,
yeah.
and now there's like no shows on Wednesdays.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, never even got to go to the open mic at the Palace, that the ill-fated Jerry Marsh open mic.
Yeah.
So I don't know why. It seems like, yeah, since there's so little going on Wednesdays, you'd think the vacuum would get filled somehow.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Who knows? But I mean, I think it got. I mean, even at the store, we have like 20 people for the best of shows on Wednesdays.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like getting oversaturated.
Yeah, I suppose that's, yeah.
Still think I'm the only one that did all four clubs in one night.
Oh.
That was an
impressive
feat.
Well, I'm in no hurry to take your crown there. Yeah,
I don't think it. It's
going
to be a tough one for
yeah,
anyone.
Yeah, no, that's definitely.
That was a cool little
too
night.
Rich for my blood.
Yeah, I did. What did I do? I did Madhouse and ACC and then Palace and then the store.
Yeah.
Did like 45 minutes in the night. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's really,
you know.
Yeah.
And but you can't really do that ever. There's no other nights you can really.
That seems like a real planets aligning sort of a
thing to just have, huh? Just lucked out.
Look at you, you know,
grinding.
Yeah.
Now I don't even do four shows in a week. So the drive that I used to have.
Oh, well.
No, I don't know. I mean, I do the Monday at the Palace.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday, I just don't know. I just don't want to get picked to do like a guest spot at ACC because it just gets me so nervous. The last time I did a guest spot that I was like, I just don't want to even have the pressure to even go there.
Yeah.
But I got to drag myself out. Now there's only a couple left. You know,
right, yeah.
Just
get
to get back in. Because I'm not one of those guys that are like, hey, can I do the show? And as you know, one of the managers doesn't respond to emails ever.
That's very true.
So that kind of got me like kind of worked up, so, but just got to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I really do wish, because, I mean, you know, I'll get booked there. If I get booked there, it's oftentimes last minute, which can play hell on your nerves. But I try my best to just roll with it. And, you know, and I don't like, you know, being pushy or like, hey, man, put me on this or put me on that. But I'll bring it up if, you know, I'm talking to one of those guys and, oh, by the way, you know, and I try not to be a scumbag about it, but let them know that I'm interested at the very least. Yeah.
It's a tough part of comedy, though. The whole schmoozing I was never good at.
Yeah, it's not. But, I mean, I'm finding that a lot of it, because this is true when I was trying to be a published author, was just getting FaceTime with people. That's usually 90% of it.
Mm-hmm.
If they just know that you're there, you know. That's just getting, that's a lot of the work done for you. If you're just writing emails and stuff like that, there's no face to put to that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more impersonal and it's easier to blow you off.
Mm-hmm.
So like when I was writing a lot, and then every year there's a mystery writers convention called BoucherCon. And I went up to that in San Francisco in 2010. I got to meet a bunch of people who I'd only talked to, you know, through emails and stuff.
Right.
And it was a lot of fun. And it was also like, hey, write me something. Or, hey, can you write an article for this or that? And I was like, yeah, I would love to.
Yeah.
So that's really just, you know, a lot of it for that anyway.
Right. Well, what's the Callaway plan? Do you have plans to go to L.A. or New York? Or
no, I don't have any plans to move anywhere as yet. I mean, I'm not even a year in, you know, so I don't want to be making any kind of long-term plans like that, but it does seem like L.A. would be the next logical step, and I don't hate L.A. like I used to. I was actually born there and lived in suburban L.A. till I was 12, and we moved down to Alpine. So I have kind of a connection. I feel kind
progressively
of
made yourself lower and lower.
Right. Yeah. And then, I also don't, it's, you know, it's such a big town and there's so many people up there.
Yeah. I hate traffic.
It's just,
I couldn't do the traffic.
It's just, it's a lot to take in. So, but I mean, as far as, if I was to get any jobs like writing comedy or jokes or anything like that, obviously that would be the place to go. But what I'd really like to do is be a road comic, I think. I think that seems like the most fun to me.
Who are some of your favorite comics now?
Oh, Regan is a big one. Hedberg has been a big influence, like, directly.
Mm.
Todd Barry also.
Did you go to his crowd work tour?
I did.
Yeah.
You can catch me in the background here and there.
Yeah, when Austin's making it happen. Did they show all of their interaction?
No, but most of it. Most of it. And then there's a scene at all three people that ended up in the movie from San Diego were all guys I know.
Okay.
Like the first guy that he's talking to is my friend TJ. He used to be a drummer for a hardcore band. And then during the end credits.
Is that the guy that got paid $100,000 for the band name?
For the band name, yeah.
Were you in that band?
No, I was not.
Oh, okay.
That was before, because TJ's a little older than me, so that was before I was even in bands at all.
Okay.
And I think he was living in New York.
How old were you when you got in your first band?
I was 18, the first band I was in. But I've been going to shows and stuff like that since I was about 16.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, but during the end credits of that crowd work special, he talks to my friend James, who is sitting right in front of me, so you can see me briefly laughing really hard.
Maybe I'll watch it tonight to see if I can get a little Callaway in my night.
I don't, you know, it's a credit. It's not a big part, but I can put that on my resume.
That? Nice no, guy you saw on Todd Barry's crowd work tour. I would do it. Fuck it. I don't care.
When I got to see Todd Barry in L.A. in January, and they had the big Riot L.A. Comedy Festival, and I went up for that, and he was doing one of the last shows of the weekend, so there wasn't that many people there, and I was right down front, and he ripped on me for a good 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was hilarious.
Right.
And so
that was my favorite thing before I did comedy, was just to go to sit out front and just have them rip on you.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. I used to be really scared of it.
Yeah.
But then it happened to me a couple times, and do you remember Ray Combs Jr.?
Yeah.
He ripped my girlfriend up at the store once. This was like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
To where she ran out crying.
Nice.
And so I had to go get her, and I, you know, console her and stuff.
Was he being real mean?
He was being pretty mean, but he was being mean to all of us. There was like four of us, but he made fun of her hair a bunch, and she got really upset.
She had weird hair.
She had kind of a mullety, like hipstery mullety.
Ah, you
thing
hipsters
going.
With your looks, yeah,
you know,
and things.
How kids are. That was the thing. Was like I was comforting her and trying to reassure her, but I was like, you know, he's just doing his job.
Yeah.
Like, that's what he does.
To make you cry. That's his job.
That's his job. So, yeah, no. I felt bad, but...
Did she go back in?
She did not.
No.
I did.
Oh.
Because I wanted to see Andrew Deans go up.
You saw Deansy?
I saw Deansy.
Do you remember Deansy?
Yeah. When I think the first time I ever went to the store was like in 01 or 02.
Do you remember who else you saw?
I saw Deans. I saw Huntsberger a couple times.
I don't
times.
Know who that is.
He's on... David Huntsberger's on... Tig Notaro's podcast now,
mm-hmm.
but he used to live here. Who else did I see? There was a bunch of guys who either don't do comedy or just aren't in town anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But we used to go see Mark Sartell all the time when he was running Lestat's.
Yeah, yeah.
And then before he was running Lestat's and America was running Lestat's. Do you remember her?
No.
I guess she moved to LA too. There was Jen Adams. We liked her. She moved away. They all move away.
Yeah.
They all break your heart.
Yeah, Lestat's wasn't as good the first time I saw it, though.
We used to go there all the time, though, because it was free.
Yeah, because I saw, first show I ever saw was Dat Fan, Whitney Cummings.
Oh, wow.
Mark Sartella, and it was awful.
Wow.
And I remember messaging Whitney Cummings on MySpace saying, like, hey, I'm thinking about doing comedy. Is it always that rough? And she actually responded.
Oh.
And now she's, like, blown up.
Sure, yeah.
You know. But
you guys
yeah,
still was, keep in touch, though?
No.
No, that's
I messaged her on Facebook once, and she didn't respond.
Mm, nah,
I was like, hey, remember me? Obviously not. But.
I saw Tom Clark at Lestat's a couple times. You ever seen him?
Mm-hmm. He's done Winston's a few times.
Oh, God, that guy's fucking hilarious.
I didn't realize he'd been doing it so long.
Yeah, he's really good.
Yeah.
When I saw him, this was like 10 years ago. I don't know. I think even then, though, he'd been doing it for a while. Because he had just done Premium Blend.
Yeah, I think he's done it for like 20 years.
Yeah. He's really good.
Yeah.
So that was when I think when Saratella was running Lestat's and it was starting to get better.
Yeah.
But I remember the first time I saw Deans, he did his old Ren Fair bit.
I don't know what that is.
He used to do this whole bit about going to the Renaissance Fair. And he was the last comic. It was like a best of night and he was the last one. And
headlining.
It was, huh?
Headlining.
Yeah, yeah. And it was like me and my friend and our girlfriends were the only ones left. But he was murdering us.
Right.
And then he got off stage and he was like, only got four fucking people? And we were like, yeah, but it was so good. Like, we were on the floor. We were just howling with laughter. I can't remember anybody else's name on that show. I'm sure as soon as I'm driving home, I'll remember a bunch of other
I think
names.
Dangerous Dick was back then.
I think Dick was back then.
Gene DeBruler, I think.
Yeah. And there was another really old guy.
Wally Wong?
No, Wally Wong was there, though.
Yeah.
I used to see him everywhere, because he used to do the Hot Monkey Love Cafe, too.
I don't even know what that is.
That was down near San Diego State. That was where the sketch group I used to do would perform.
Okay.
And they would have, on Mondays from 8 to 9, they would have stand-up, and they would let us do our shtick before that show started. So I'd see Wally Wong and Cheruboga. I can't remember his first name. That was weird because Mr. Cheruboga was a history teacher at my junior high. And then when I was 26, I'd see him doing stand-up and eating shit all the time.
Yeah.
And it was kind of surreal.
Did you talk to him?
No. I don't think you... I never actually had him
as
my own teacher, but I remembered him. It was a very small junior high out in Alpine.
Yeah.
So that was weird. And then Brian April used to run that room, and I guess he's still in town, because I remember he was working at Sony, and I have friends that work there still that know him. And he had just moved out here from Boston, and he was doing comedy classes and stuff there, and he tried to pitch us on it, but we just didn't have the money. But Matt Warburton was very young Matt Warburton, who's like, he's now a DJ at ACC as well, took his class.
Okay.
And then like I didn't realize when I met Matt recently that we had actually known each other from then. He didn't have the beard then.
Oh.
So I didn't even recognize him. But, yeah, he was around back then.
What's your take on comedy classes?
I haven't taken any just because I don't tend to have the money.
Mm.
But I would like to because I do pretty well in a classroom environment.
Mm.
Like, when I graduated from high school, I went to community college for about a year and just would show up drunk and stuff like that. So I dropped out. and partied for, you know, 5 or 6 years. And then I went, all right, back to school, and then I buckled down, and I really liked it. So if I find myself in that kind of an environment still, I'm like, oh, yeah, I can. And, you know, I've always, I think you can learn stuff always.
Okay. So yeah. You don't knock people that take a class?
No, not at all. Yeah. I mean, obviously there's going to be varying quality, I guess, depending on who's teaching.
Right.
But I don't know. I felt like I studied studied comedy pretty analytically growing up. I wrote a term paper about it in college. So that doesn't necessarily make me funny, but I was like, I kind of know how this works.
Yeah.
And I would talk about it with my other comedy nerd friends all the time. So I haven't felt like a real need to take a class, but not like I'm not looking down my nose at it at all.
Okay.
Yeah. You can always learn more stuff.
What about comedy contests?
Contests are a little trickier because I understand the reasons why, like clubs or whatever, would do that. But, you know, like when Adam was doing that one at the Second Wind, that didn't end very well.
Right.
Or at all.
Didn't end at all.
Yeah. And then, like that, when Shamrocks was doing that kind of gong show thing where it was like a competition, it adds an element of suspense, I suppose, to the crowd. And I understand why that seems necessary, but I also am like, I think, you know, why just let the jokes speak for themselves?
Yeah.
So, but as, I mean, as far as the big San Diego contest went, I had fun doing it. I advanced past round one, which that was more than I was expecting.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was bummed out when I didn't make it past the second round, but I was like, oh, I'm, you know, surprised that I even made it this far.
Yeah.
So, and it made me feel good for next time. And that didn't cost me anything. It was stage time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
How often are you getting up a week usually?
About three times, I want to say. Three okay. to four. A little more than that, I guess. If I can triple dip on Sunday, and then Tuesday, and then Friday, and then I can usually find somewhere Saturday. Like, Berner and I have been going to Orange County a lot on Saturday.
What's up there?
Either Thunder Goat, that Eric Wargo runs out of his backyard. And it's like a book show slash open mic, but he'll get like name guys like Blake Wexler was there last week, which I missed, unfortunately. Greg Barrett's going to be there next week. And not like, you know, huge household names, but like Ahmed Barucha was there. I like that guy.
Right.
Like comedy nerd names.
You had Doug Culp's room, didn't you?
I've done, yeah, we did. Jeffrey and I went up there for the final apartment show last week, and it went really well. There was like 10 or 15 people there, which for Doug's apartment, you know, it's not bad at all.
Mm.
And it went fine. Like, yeah, Berner and I both did very well.
And you drive for free? You don't get paid going up there?
No, unfortunately. But, I mean, I like driving, for one thing.
All right.
So I don't mind. I like, you know, playing the stereo or whatever. And there's nothing else really going on in town on Saturday unless you look for something. So I think Berner and I are both hungry enough for the stage time that we'll drive.
Well, that's good. I remember that. Enjoying comedy still.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to continuing to enjoy it. I'm not looking forward to getting burnt out on it, which has happened a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
There are definitely nights where I'm just like, I'm just going to.
Right. What's the longest you've gone without doing it since you started?
Oh, I'd say like 4 or 5 days. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've let a whole week go by.
Okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah. I think around Christmas time, which I think most people kind of will take it easier because there's not as much going on anyway. But yeah, I mean, even if I'm feeling burnt, then I'll take a day or two and just not go.
Are you still as big of a comedy fan as you were before?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
That's good.
I can't get enough of it. It's I like a lot of stuff, and I like a lot of stuff a lot.
Right.
So, like, I'm really into comics, and I'm really into comedy, and I'm really into records, and you know what I mean?
About stuff you see on Comedy Central?
Well, as far as what?
What do you think of the quality of, like, are you sitting there watching the Comedy Central special laughing, thinking that this is funny?
Not always. I don't think I've become that much more critical than I was before, because I was always pretty critical.
Okay.
Like, I watched Chris D'Elia's new hour.
D'Elia?
Is that how you say it? D'Elia. And I didn't like it.
No.
And it wasn't terrible, but I'm like...
Did you like his earlier stuff?
I'd seen some clips. I hadn't even seen, like, a full, you know, special before. Mm-hmm. And I liked those. But when it came to a whole 60 minutes of them, was it for me.
It was too much.
Yeah. And then I just watched Tommy Jonigan's new half hour.
I watched the other one. Mike Kaplan. He has something on.
I haven't seen Kaplan.
Is that it, Mike Kaplan?
I think Kaplan's got one. There was.
He has it on Netflix. I'm just not sure on the name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I know the half hour, the new season of the half hour just started, and I missed the first week.
Yeah.
So I don't remember. I think it was like Giannis Pappas and somebody else. I missed that. And then they just watched Tommy Jonigan and Adam Lawrence, and Jonigan crushed me. And I had seen that guy on, like, I think on John Oliver's stand-up show.
Yeah.
And he's really, really funny.
I liked them both on when they were on Last Comic Standing.
I had stopped watching Last Comic Standing after they kicked off Doug Benson. That was the last. I didn't even finish that season.
Okay. I don't even know what season that was.
That was season 3.
Yeah. I just watched his new movie.
Does he have a new movie?
He has something on Netflix. Like, it's something about weed and...
Wait, what?
Yeah,
a Doug Benson thing about weed smoking. Yeah.
But he goes on the road with a guy that doesn't smoke.
And oh, right. Yeah, I have heard
the
about
greatest
it.
Story ever rolled.
Yes.
That's what it was.
I still haven't even seen Super High Me.
Yeah, I saw them both. But yeah. Well, we're coming up to the end here.
Oh, okay.
What's the worst show you've ever done?
Oh, the worst show I've ever done. You know, I don't do that many. Even when, like, somebody asked me that, and I was like, you know, even when I eat shit, it's still better than having a job. So, yeah, but I think actually you were there for the worst show I ever done at the Second Wind.
Okay.
When a guy started heckling me because I mentioned Bruce Springsteen's name, and then April wished death upon me.
Yeah, yeah, I was outside, but I was at that show.
That was no fun.
Yeah, I didn't realize you guys were roommates at the time. Yeah. That's why she got so upset.
Yes, she's very protective.
Mm-hmm.
And then
she's actually on next week.
Oh, is she?
Yeah.
Oh, give her my regards.
I won't. Tuck her in when you go home. I don't have to give her your regards.
All right, fine. Be a wise guy about it. So her and Adam got into it, and it was a whole thing.
Yeah.
And that was no fun. And as I recall, I was already just kind of bummed out. That's why I find it important to like take time off. Because there was another show, this might actually have been worse. There was an open mic at the store. I hadn't gone up at the store anyway for a couple weeks. So I was like, you know, I was really depressed. And I was like, well, if I just go, you know, I just got to push through this. So I went up to the store and I went up and I ate shit so hard.
Well, was there anybody there?
And there was nobody there.
Yeah.
And I was like, why did I just put myself through that?
Yeah.
Like, because there is that kind of romantic thing that kind of like, oh, you got to do the work and you got to grind, and I'm like, I believe in that, but I mean, there's times where it's just going to make things worse.
Yeah, I agree.
So that might have been the worst show I ever had, where I forced myself to go up and regretted it.
Yeah.
So now if I feel like I have to force it, I'm not going to do it. But fortunately, I don't feel that way very often.
Yeah. Well, what's the best show you've ever done?
Oh, the best show I've ever done. Well, those Funches shows were a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. But... And not to sound disingenuous at all, but when I featured at Winston's that first time, that was a lot of fun.
Mm.
And it was the first like book show I'd done, and I felt, you know, I'd only been doing it for a couple months, and you guys were kind enough to have me on there in a feature spot, and I did really well.
Mm.
And so, you know, I was doing like, you know, I have that kind of deadpan thing going when I'm up there.
Yeah.
But inside, I was going, like, I was really enjoying myself. Right. It was hard to stay in character like
that. Yeah.
And that was the hardest it was for me to stay in that kind of character.
Right.
So I think that would still be right up there.
A lot of times we have Winston's as the best and worst show sometimes.
Yeah. I've had bad shows there for sure. When Hicks and I headlined, it didn't go nearly as well as that feature spot had.
Yeah.
But it wasn't terrible either.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's another... I'll often expect the worst, and then when it actually happens, like, oh, that was actually okay.
Well, that's what I do every set. I think it's going to go bad, and if it goes well, it's like, oh, hey, it went well.
Yeah.
Well, do you have anything for me? Questions? Concerns?
So tell me more about this girl you're dating, Jeff.
No, I don't.
You just said I could have questions.
Yeah, not about women, about comedy. I don't talk about my life, bro.
Yeah, no, let's talk. I don't want to talk about that anyway. I've heard you mention on the show that you have a packet, right, of like jokes that you're like late night type jokes.
I did a packet. I submitted it for when it was like Kaplan at Night with just show, but that got canceled, and I didn't get picked up.
What show was it?
Kaplan at night.
Oh, the Mike
Scott
Kaplan.
Oh, no, Scott Kaplan. Scott Kaplan. That lasted like 2 months and then got canceled.
How did you even get that? Like
Gordon was looking for people.
Gordon Downs.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But then they had like a falling out, and Gordon wasn't even on the show anyway. So.
Oh, that's a
problem. Yeah.
But how did you find that? Like that process writing those.
It's terrible.
Like that?
I hate it.
Really?
Yeah. It took me like. Literally took me 3 hours to write 10 monologue jokes.
What was the difficulty there?
I don't really write jokes like that.
Mm-hmm.
Monologue jokes, and it's real hacky. I mean, what
it
you're
is pretty hacky.
You know, and you're just taking stuff from the news, and it wasn't a part of my brain that I use normally.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times what I do for jokes at this point is I'll see something weird, and I'll riff it on stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so trying to think of something with set up punchline, I don't really do one-liners either, so it was just a different... So it was just me in my bed. I had like YouTube of like the rain playing in the background, mm-hmm. and I'm just trying to think, you know, but like sketch ideas, that took me like 10 minutes to write 10 of those.
Right.
But writing those monologue jokes were really hard.
Do you think if you had written those monologue jokes with somebody that would have, I mean, because like you and Jesse do stuff together, right? Or no?
No.
No?
I don't really like writing with people.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just... I've written with people before that I felt like I was giving them stuff,
mm-hmm.
but I wasn't going to use anything that they tell me because mm-hmm. a lot of times, like I said, I'm riffing. So I'll say a joke 3 times this week and it'll be different each time
because
I'm kind of just training my brain to just be in the moment and, you know, do that. You know, that's why a lot of time in bigger shows, I'll use older jokes because I know them better.
Yeah.
You know, but I have, you know. A lot of material, you know, just as far as remembering it.
So that's like your process then, is like you're writing on stage more than anything. Because I'll sit down and actually
That's what I did when I first started. I would write on front and back of a piece of paper mm-hmm. and then whittle and whittle and whittle.
Mm-hmm.
But at this time, I'm just carrying around a little notebook. I'll write down something that I think is weird and mm-hmm. then I'll just riff it on stage.
Yeah.
You know, which sometimes I'll write in the notebook like a lot of it, but other times I won't. I'll just write like, because I saw, like, I don't know if you saw, like, coming in, but there's, like, a scrapbooking fair.
I did see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just riffed on that, like, because I think that's, like, a really lonely fair.
Yeah.
Like, so it's just something like that. I'll see something weird like that and then try to come up with ideas, you know?
See, I can't, like, I don't, I'm very, like, in this one-liner sort of state of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to restrict myself, but that is where I feel more comfortable. But I would like to be able to riff more, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like a skill. It's a different kind of comedy because, like, when I first started, you know, I had longer jokes. But also, like, I used to go to the Blarney Stone and just do crowd work.
Mm-hmm.
For a year, I did that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and obviously you get better at that point.
Yeah.
You know. And then I think my writing suffered
mm-hmm.
because I wasn't really writing jokes because I was like, well, I can just fall back on this.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Which, like, you bring up Russell, you know, a lot of times, the last few times I've seen him, he's wanted to get into material, but he's just, he likes doing crowd work so much that it's worked out for him. But
it has, yeah.
For me, I need, like, a combination of both.
Yeah, I couldn't do what he does. And he did tell, like, one of the last times I saw him, which was last summer, he was doing crowd work, and then he kind of ran out. And so he started doing material, and he was like, I hate when I have to do material. Like, it was something that he only resorted to after, you know, as, like, a last resort, which is weird, but, I mean, if it works for him.
Yeah, I mean, did you see that video he did?
Which,
like,
one?
Like, something in England. It wasn't, like, it was just an interview with him.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, and it was pretty interesting. He was just talking about, like, you got to do comedy for the way you want to do it,
mm-hmm.
and the way he's doing is how he enjoys it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it's working out pretty well for him.
And kind of the way what I'm doing now is I enjoy it, you
mm-hmm.
know, because it's not, I wouldn't say it's completely just crowd work. Because,
no.
But I don't really just say, hey, your shirt is dumb.
Mm-hmm.
But if someone like woos loud or claps weird, then I'll address that.
Right.
You know, but I wouldn't say that's completely, because more mine is like shitting on myself as opposed to shitting on the crowd.
Right.
You know, but yeah, I mean, as long as you're enjoying it,
yeah,
you know, no. I think just continue to do the way you want to do it.
Yeah, that's my plan, but I guess my only concern is that if I ever want to branch out, if I haven't trained my brain like you're saying, like that's kind of, you know, when you want to learn something new, the hardest part is just actually starting to do it Do you know what I mean?
Of course. I mean, like, we teach the comedy class, and people get frustrated. They're like, I'm not doing it well. I'm like, you've gone up three times.
Right.
How do you expect to be good at it already?
Right. Yeah.
But, well, thanks for coming in,
hey,
man.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jeff.
You got a Twitter? Where can they tweet you?
At Jimmy the Worm is my Twitter handle. It's all one word there. And I'm also on the Facebook there, and...
Jimmy the Worm as well on Facebook?
No, it's just Jimmy Calloway.
Jimmy Calloway. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for coming in, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Check out his podcast, If I'm Loud or I'm Right.
Yeah.
Comes out
every Monday.
Every Monday.
Except for this week, it was Wednesday.
Yeah, sometimes it's Wednesday. So just check out his thing.
Yeah.
smalltinyworm@yahoo.org. All right, man. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, man.
This has been a Point and Yell production. Yeah, I think the words, but sometimes they don't come out of my mouth no good.